A Conversation with Shirley MacLaine, or How Katie, Adam, and Chris Deal with That Pesky Little Fate Thing. Authors, Idaho Phoenix and X-Man Hater. Read by X-Man Hater. Rating, M. Pairings, Katie/Chris, and Chris/Adam. Note, this is a work of fanfiction. The characters in this story are named after real people, but are not actually them. None of this happened. Shirley's Office, November 2, 2008. Katie enters the office and glances around a little nervously. Coming here was Adam's idea, not hers, and as seemed to happen so often these days, Chris jumped in to back Adam up, turning his puppy dog brown eyes on her when she had stomped her feet and said, "Absolutely not." Then Chris, the traitor, had walked behind her and run his fingers through her hair. Just as he knew it would, Katie had found her resolve melting until she just wanted to say yes to Chris. And yes again about everything, forever and always. The office is not what Katie expects. No mysterious masks on the wall, no crystals or incense. Just a breathtaking view of the ocean and the kind of modern art Katie has never understood. Big strokes of bold color, no narrative whatsoever. One wall is equipped with a dancer's bar and dark curtains that she guesses hide mirrors. She looks around the room. The furniture is mismatched, a cozy couch and an armchair set that could have been picked up at a garage sale. A sleek leather chair with no back, and, surprisingly, a chair that looks like a wooden throne with ivy engraved up the arms and a high back. Katie chooses to sit in the throne, ignoring the fact that she has to perch on the edge to get her feet to touch the ground. She sits up straight and waits. A few moments later, Shirley MacLaine steps into the room. She glances at Katie, taking in Katie's choice of seating with a small smile, and walks over to the leather chair, and with a dancer's grace, takes a seat. Peering over a pair of half-glasses, she starts the conversation. Catherine Allen, can't say as I've heard of you before, but that means next to nothing. I have a terrible time keeping up with anything that's new these days. More and more often I find myself remembering times past, this life or the ones before. Although I must say that there's something familiar about you. Katie shifts a little in her seat and looks down at her legs, primly crossed in front of her. The salon tan looks quite natural, she thinks, not going orange at all. Shirley leans forward. What are you thinking about?
To tell the truth, my legs.
Ah, yes, well, they will do quite nicely, although you don't need that dreadful fake tan. Be proud of your body as it is. Don't wait like I did until you reach middle age to notice your assets. You have a lovely natural skin tone. Share it with the world.
Yes, ma'am.
Fuck, don't call me ma'am. You'll make me feel ancient. Shirley crosses her legs, and Katie notices that they are magnificent. A dancer's legs.
They are still beautiful, aren't they? Shirley says matter-of-factly.
Yes, yes they are. Well, enough pleasantries. Shirley pulls a pen and a small notepad from her purse. What brings you to my office, young lady?
I suppose you could say it's Adam. He said you might know how to help me. He said that you were a kind of interpreter or translator or something. I don't know, none of it really makes sense. But everything in my world seems to cycle back to Adam these days.
Adam?
Adam Lambert?
Oh, that delicious boy! Goddess, is he refreshing. Makes me feel young again.
Katie stands up and walks to the window, letting out an irritated breath.
What is it with Adam? You and every middle-aged woman in the world seem to see something that I don't. Not to mention my husband.
Oh, my dear, you have just won my heart. Katie turns around, confused.
What did I say?
You called me middle-aged. I haven't been called middle-aged in almost a decade. I think the standard moniker, well, that is when I'm not being called crazy or dotty or eccentric. Anyhow, the standard phrase is legendary. Mind you, my legs have been called legendary since I was a very young woman. That was fine. But you know that you've been put on a shelf, along with the paprika and Loudon salt, when one's actual self is referred to as legendary.
Oh, I don't think you're legendary at all. I had never even heard of you until last week, although I'll admit Adam made fun of me for it. He said, in that diva voice he gets when he's trying to take charge, "Why, certainly even in godforsaken Conway, Arkansas, they've heard of Shirley MacLaine. She's legendary!"
Katie quickly sees the trap she's woven for herself, but is relieved when Shirley lets out a deep, undignified guffaw.
Miss Catherine Allen, you are a delight. I haven't heard this kind of honest reaction since Bella Abzug told me that if I had spoken to aliens, she was a Republican.
Shirley looks at Katie as if expecting her to laugh, but honestly, Katie couldn't be more lost. and that isn't a feeling Katie likes at all. She is all about being in charge. She hadn't been called Her Highness from the age of 5 on for nothing. Be that as it may, Katie knows she sounds high-handed, but the whole thing is getting off track. I'm here for some advice, and I expect you to, you know, advise me? Something in Katie's tone seems to strike Shirley. She narrows her eyes and says, "Oh, certainly, certainly. That is always what you're looking for, isn't it? Well, let's not dilly-dally, then. What seems to be the problem?" "As I was saying, it kind of started with Adam, but now it's Chris, and I guess even me. Oh, God, I'm just going to sound like a complete wacko."
"Then you're in the right place. Listening to people who sound like wackos is my specialty, you see. So please don't worry. Why don't you start at the beginning?"
Katie sighs and settles back into her seat. "So I've been having these, well, I guess you would call them dreams, only they sometimes happen when I'm awake. Adam calls them visions, and Chris calls them having a good imagination, and I just call them disturbing."
"Yes?"
"They started when Chris was on Idol. Actually, it was the first time I saw Chris and Adam together. It was after the Hollywood auditions, and it wasn't anything big. They were talking to each other, and Chris had this, well, expression on his face that I hadn't seen before. A little self-conscious and super, super alive, and he was, like, laughing at every single thing Adam said. And that was all. It wasn't a big deal, and I thought I shouldn't think much of it, because in a way, everyone reacts like that to Adam. Except for the people who seem to be freaked out by him, like Goki, but that's another story."
"So Adam was charismatic. That's no surprise."
"That's what I told myself. But it didn't feel quite right, you know, because one of the things I love about Chris is that he's virtually immune to charisma. It's like he floats along in his own little boat of self-assurance, but never cocky, and he hates people who self-promote. Even when trying out for Idol, when they asked if he thought he was the best singer, he said, 'No, probably not. There's probably better singers out there.' That's Chris, just doesn't want to make too big a deal of things. So why is he suddenly into Mr. Center Sage himself? Can you tell me that?"
"Catherine, I think there is more that you aren't telling me. You said something about dreams?"
"Oh, yes, so that first night I go back to the hotel, and I just had this really, really bad feeling in my stomach. Like this deep sinking feeling in my gut, and just this pain, real pain in my heart that felt, well, still feels so familiar, but I'm not sure why. Oh, this is so hard to explain, but it was like a kind of, the only word I can think of is ineffability. Like this magic glowing thing that has been between me and Chris since, well, forever, was in danger. You know, I picked him out, right? I saw him leaning against a locker our freshman year with this confused, lost look on his face because it turned out he didn't know how to find his homeroom class. And so I said I'd show him, and he smiled, and that was just it for me. I knew he was mine, and I was his, and we just clicked. But that night, there I was, alone in the hotel room because, you know, they wouldn't let me and Chris sleep together during Idol. I mean, he had to stay in that ridiculous mansion, and you do know who his roommate was, right?"
Shirley shakes her head no and says, "But I can guess."
"Damn right. It was Adam. Of course it was Adam."
"The dreams?"
Katie takes a deep breath. "So, that night I finally took a couple of Benadryl because I just couldn't sleep. I just felt hyper and had this unbearable sense of dread, and I was so relieved when I finally fell asleep. Then I had the dream, or at least part of it. There was this beautiful woman. She had long brown hair and deep brown eyes, and she was wearing this kind of elegant blue gown, gathered at the waist, but showing her figure. And it was as if the sun were shining around her, you know, almost like a halo you'd see around the Madonna in Renaissance art, only she didn't have a Madonna feel. She felt more, well, earthy, really. I mean, her lips just asked to be kissed, and her eyes were full of laughter, and she was looking at me, just at me, like I was the center of the world, and, oh my God, do you hear what I'm saying? Does this make sense to you?"
Katie looks into Shirley's eyes, asking for understanding.
"I'm listening. No need to judge or edit. The world may do that to you, but I won't, and you shouldn't do it to yourself. So she was looking at you like you were the center of the world. And who, may I ask, were you?"
Katie is a little startled by the question.
"Well, I was me. Of course I was me. I mean, in some ways, I felt more like me than I've ever felt in my whole life. But then I noticed my arms and my hands, and honestly, that's what woke me up. The kind of waking up when you're falling sharp, sudden, really, really wide awake, because, really..."
"Your hands and arms?"
"They were, men's arms and hands. I mean, a seriously manly man, strong with muscles that were visible and,
Oh, God, brown hair and these leather wristbands and this big giant ring with a kind of crest. And calluses. Lots of calluses.
So you were a man?
Yes, me. I mean, look at me.
Katie looks down at her hands, which feature shell pink nail polish, adjusts herself in her seat and crosses her legs demurely.
Do I look anything like a man to you? What in the world was I supposed to make of that?
What did you make of it? Shirley asks.
At first I tried to just ignore it, you know, one of those weird things that happens in dreams. But then I kept having the dream, a little more every night. There was a jousting match and long rides through the forest and meals with my knights. My lady sitting on my left, letting out big, undignified laughs that delighted me to my very core, even though I knew her openness would not stand her in good stead with the other royalty. And finally, this was a couple of days after the Idol finale, I actually dreamt about having, well, you know.
Katie shifts uncomfortably.
You dreamt about having sex, Shirley says matter-of-factly.
Yes, but not just sex. Real, soul-shattering, love-making, passionate sex. And I even, orgasmed. How could this be? I mean, of course everyone dreams about sex sometimes. Chris and I have talked about that before, and he says he's even had dreams where he's had sex with guys, but to not worry about it because that's just the crazy way dreams go. Which I guess is kind of true, although I think until recently my dreams were kind of boring because ever since I met him there was no one but Chris. Always Chris, even in my dreams. Now suddenly I'm having crazy-ass dreams where I'm coming inside a beautiful woman.
Katie takes a surprised breath.
Oh God, did I just say that out loud?
Shirley sighs. How people do fuss about gender. It never ceases to amaze me. But listen to yourself, you sound quite natural. So you ejaculated.
If you want to be clinical about it, yes, I ejaculated.
Katie emits a short, sharp laugh.
I ejaculated from my penis. There, I've said it, and it doesn't even sound that weird to me, although I know it should. But truth is, I woke up feeling, well, you know, and climbed on top of Chris, and let's say that we both started the day very energized. Shirley, do people often find themselves telling you these kinds of things?
I have heard many stories many times, Shirley answers with a sage little nod. But, Catherine, I don't believe that simply dreaming you were a man would have resulted in Adam advising you to see me.
Oh, no, I haven't even told him about that. Although, who knows, Chris may have. Chris seems to tell him everything these days.
So Adam and Chris are close, Shirley asks gently.
Yes, I've never seen anything like it. Sometimes it feels to me like American Idol was just a way to get the two of them together. Like you'd think the big dividing point in our life would be before Idol and after Idol, but it isn't. It really isn't. Chris is stupidly casual about the whole winning thing. Instead, it's all about Adam. Life before and after Adam, until sometimes there's hardly room for me anymore. Sometimes I'll walk in on the two of them giggling like two schoolgirls, and Chris will startle as if I've caught him at something, even though they're not even standing close together. I'd be really suspicious except for Adam, who could not be more gentlemanly with me. He even calls me Lady Kate. He has from the first time we met, and it's not a smarmy thing at all. The weird thing is, Adam seems so familiar to me. I have so many feelings about him, sad and hopeful and affectionate and angry. So maybe it isn't so odd that I did what I did.
And that was?
The first time it happened was after the Idol finale in our hotel room. Adam came in to say goodnight, and suddenly the room went all kind of shimmery. And I found myself standing tall and demanding that Adam take an oath. I said, "Who is your liege lord? To whom do you owe your loyalty and your life?" And Adam sank to his knees and bowed his head and said, "To you, always to you." And I said, "Best ye not forget it." And I kissed his brow and then Chris said, "What the hell?" And then the room was just a hotel room, but you should have seen Adam's face. It was as if all the joy he'd been feeling just withered inside, and he was left looking hollow, really haunted, and Chris gave me this look, as if he hated me for just a minute. But then he came over and kissed me on my neck and said, "Of course our loyalty is to you." And I felt a chill because, you know, he didn't say his loyalty, he said our.
You said that was the first time, so there were more?
Oh, many more, and always when the three of us are together. It's like I'm suddenly transported to another time, another place. And I find myself saying these things and using words I'd never use, like thee and thou. Chris likes to say a prayer before he goes on stage. So one night during the Idol tour, I was with him and Adam in their dressing room, and he asked me to say a prayer. This is what I said. I remember it all because it came so naturally from my mouth. Oh, merciful God, I have such need of your mercy now, not for myself, but for my knights, for this is truly their hour of need. Deliver them from their trials ahead, and I will pay you 1,000-fold with any sacrifice you ask of me. And if in your wisdom you should determine that sacrifice must be my life or theirs, so that they can once again taste the freedom that has so long been denied to them, I will gladly make that covenant. My death will have a purpose. I ask no more than that.
That's interesting.
Interesting? Interesting is goddamn nuts. Chris kind of just laughed and said he thought it was a little over the top for a pre-concert prayer, but Adam said, No, it's just right. Each night we do our show, it's a kind of battle. A giving of all of ourselves to the audience so they can leave us being more than who they were when they arrived. Although, Lady Kate, it is not your sacrifice the audience seeks, but mine and his. And I nodded, because it's true, you know, the audience wants everything of them, everything, and I can't protect either of them, not really.
And what did Chris say?
Chris got really irritated. Nobody is dying, and nobody is sacrificing anything for anyone, he said, and then, Katie, there's something wrong here, something way wrong. With you and Adam together, something is just off. When I'm one-on-one with either of you, it's all good, but the three of us together, things just go wonky, and I don't understand it because you don't even know each other all that well. I mean, I'm the connecting line between you, but sometimes I feel like I'm just a bystander watching some sort of weird love story battle between, I don't know, something epic like Godzilla and King Kong. Only much prettier, of course. Well, both Adam and I got kind of huffy about that comparison. Katie smooths her skirt and looks up with a twinkle in her eyes. But we had to kind of agree that things weren't right. And I said that I just wanted to stop having these weird visions, and that's when Adam suggested that I come talk to you. So, here I am. Do you think you can help?
Shirley stands up. That really depends on the three of you. It always has. Maybe this time you can make the story end differently. Katie listens then to what Shirley has to say, and, much to her surprise, believes every single word of it. When Katie disappears behind the office door with Shirley, Adam and Chris share a look and settle into the slightly uncomfortable chairs in the waiting room. Adam's pretty sure he's more nervous than Katie or Chris. This was his idea, and he'll feel responsible if Katie has a bad experience. For the first time in what feels like forever, he can't think of anything to say to Chris, and an awkward silence springs up. If they were still on tour, he wouldn't have thought twice about tucking Chris in for a reassuring hug, or distracting him with a chatter about people Chris has never met. Now, though, he's hyper-aware of the proper distance to leave between them, a necessity if he's ever going to get over this crush. He's still calling it a crush, because it seems safer that way. Crush. Adam contemplates the word and decides it's just right. A crazy schoolgirl crush that has suddenly made Adam find plaid shirts arousing and contemplate putting a poster of Chris on his bedroom wall. Crush, as in something so overwhelming that it crushes out everything else, so sometimes Adam can hardly breathe for the want of Chris. Crush like a steamroller that has run over his ability to revel fully in the awesome amazingness of his newfound stardom, because just behind the joy is this upwelling of sadness that he can't shake no matter how hard he tries. Crush, as in the ability to harm and injure innocent people. Because damn if he had not instantly loved Katie. And how could that be true? He really didn't know her, did he? Katie, who pushes Chris to be more than he imagines himself, who looked at Adam after he came off the stage from Ring of Fire, feeling alternately exhilarated and terrified that he was about to get booted off the show, and said, "You'll never go wrong when you follow your truth," then laid her hands on his head and gave him a solemn nod of acknowledgement that had made him well up with pride. And why the hell should he care about her approval so much? And then there was the time Adam leaned down to kiss Chris on his head, and Chris looked up at Adam with a quirk of a smile and sparkling eyes that seemed to say, "Come on in, I see you and the water is warm." And, oh, the smell of Chris's hair was like some kind of crazy aphrodisiac for Adam. This was so stupid and adolescent. But when Adam looked up, he saw Katie's gaze on him, steady and sad. And damn it, Adam did not break up married couples. He just didn't. Some things you couldn't live with, and that was one. But here's the thing, and it makes Adam sad and guilty and hopeful, all in a confusing mix that just won't let him go. He thinks he'd have a shot with Chris, that Chris might not be fully letting himself know, but that if even once Adam reached out, Chris would reach out too, and there would be no going back. Chris lets out a sigh, bringing Adam out of his reverie. "Thank you," Chris says, finally meeting Adam's eyes.
If you hadn't taken this thing with Katie seriously, I wouldn't have known who to talk to.
It's you. Of course I took it seriously.
Adam decides cheering Chris up is the obvious way out of their silence and takes it gratefully.
Shirley is amazing, you'll see.
She'll have an answer and you and Katie will be back to normal in no time.
Chris starts to look hopeful.
You really think so?
Adam smiles and reaches out to ruffle Chris's hair.
I know so.
The relief on Chris's face makes the pang of want he feels welling up inside at the touch worth it.
Adam pushes it aside and keeps talking.
Did I ever tell you about the time Brad tried to explain his past life to Shirley at a book signing?
Chris leans back and smiles.
No, but I think you need to tell me about it.
Adam loves telling this story, and it's good to think about Brad, to remember there was a time before Chris, a time when he thought love was something light and malleable.
You know how when people remember a past life, they're never just, I don't know, a housewife from Pittsburgh?
Chris nods.
Sure, they're always Cleopatra or something.
Well, when Brad meets Shirley, he tells her that he remembers being Marie Antoinette.
Chris snorts.
And then he tells Shirley that the whole let them eat cake thing was a big misunderstanding. And Shirley just nods patiently and says, do tell.
Adam shares what sounds like a very odd conversation indeed, finally explaining that Brad told Shirley he had a bone to pick with her. Brad then stood as tall as he could and dramatically pulled the scarf from around his throat and said, you, Shirley, I'm sad to say, were the executioner, and let me tell you, it makes me nervous just exposing my neck around you. So what are you going to do to make it up to me?
By the time Adam finishes with a pretty accurate impression of Brad being thrown out of Barnes & Noble, Chris is laughing so hard tears come to his eyes, and Adam's not far behind.
This is why I love you, Chris says, and Adam's heart stops, then stutters back into a regular beat.
Chris doesn't mean it like that.
You always know what to say.
Yeah, well, you're a good listener, Adam says.
Chris goes still, the laughter leaving his voice.
I mean it, Adam. You're a good friend, to me and Katie.
Adam swallows. This isn't really where he wants the conversation to go, but Chris's words give him a warm glow along with the discomfort.
Before he has to decide how to respond, the door to Shirley's office slams open, and Katie appears in the doorway, face flushed with emotion. Chris immediately rushes to give her a hug, and she melts into it for a moment, and Adam can't even be jealous. They look so perfect together, and he likes Katie too much to be resentful.
Shirley needs to see you too, Katie says as she pulls back from the hug.
Chris moves from one foot to the other and shrugs helplessly at Adam.
Okay, he says, and Adam settles back into his seat for more waiting.
Wait, Katie says, walking over to Adam and pulling him up with one hand.
She needs to see all of us.
She smiles at Adam, a little stiffly, but then she laughs when he hesitates.
Come on, Adam, Shirley's a fan of yours.
Adam bites back a delighted, really? And he and Chris follow Katie meekly into the office. Once Katie Allen's made a decision, there's no fighting it. Shirley welcomes Chris and Adam warmly and seems to bask a little when Adam raises her hand to his lips for a gentleman's kiss. Chris, however, is not especially charmed. Shirley seems so sure of herself, while Katie is clearly in some kind of pain or conflict. He notices that Shirley has allowed her elbows to get dry and wrinkly. It's not the kindest thing to think, he knows, but he's always been good at noticing details about women that most men let slip by. Chris sits on the sofa, expecting Katie to join him. Instead, she moves to sit on what looks more like a throne than anything else. Adam glances at the couch, and Chris pats it invitingly, but Adam gives a small shake of his head, sort of an admonishment, as if Chris were breaking some kind of rule. Adam stays standing, looking at Katie, who finally gestures to him to sit, and Adam gingerly perches on the edge of an armchair. Shirley looks at each of them and says, Catherine and I have had a good conversation. In this lifetime, at least, I believe Catherine is listening to me.
Katie sits up even straighter.
What? Chris interrupts.
Chris, this will go better if you just listen for a while. Listen to your wife. I think you no longer need me in the room, but I will be available for consultation.
Catherine has asked me to help her get started by sharing three simple words. Arthur, Lancelot, Guinevere. And with that, Shirley stands up and sweeps out of the room. Chris lets out a snort.
Arthur, Lancelot, Guinevere? What, does she mean us?
Oh my God, that's even worse than Cleopatra and Marie Antoinette, isn't it, Adam?
Chris appeals to Adam for confirmation, and instead sees Adam looking at his hands, his face taut.
Chris looks to Katie, who simply says, Chris, just listen for a bit. It's going to sound crazy, but it's true. I swear it's true.
Katie proceeds to tell Adam and Chris almost everything she has learned.
She tells him that she hasn't just been having visions or dreams, that she's been having memories, real memories of a past life. She makes the case strongly, speaking of the specificity of her memories. She describes a life in which the three of them were Arthur, Lancelot, and Guinevere. Chris has to interrupt here.
So you're telling me that you're Guinevere and I'm Arthur? Well, that must mean that Adam's Lancelot and that you're in love with him, which, Katie, honey, won't end well for you, because if there's anything that I know, it's that Adam is not into girls. Not in this lifetime, anyway.
Oh, Chris. Katie rises from her chair and at last comes to sit by Chris, taking his hands in hers. He feels much better with her nearby, more solid somehow.
That's not what I'm telling you at all.
Well, you're right about Adam. He is Lancelot. But I'm not Guinevere. Chris looks over at Adam and is surprised to see Adam shrug in a sort of embarrassed acknowledgement.
Yep, she's right, he says.
I'm that big old knight Lancelot. I knew it as soon as the name was mentioned in this room.
God, I've always hated him in the stories. Why didn't he just pretend?
Why couldn't he settle on another girl? Why did he have to keep coming back? What a dork.
Katie shakes her head adamantly.
Adam, you were never a dork. Sensitive, yes, and sometimes without a sense of humor. Thank goodness that at least doesn't seem to be a problem this time around. But you've always been so damn noble and irritatingly competent at just about everything.
Lance, do you remember how many times you tried to leave? And it almost killed you and her. None of us wanted that.
Besides, you know I needed you too, Katie says.
Chris barely hears the words because he is focused on the hand gesture Katie just made. The one where, if his eyes and ears aren't lying, Katie pointed at Chris and called him her.
Whoa, wait, Katie, are you telling me that you think you're Arthur?
I am Arthur, in this life and all the others.
And if Adam's Lancelot, then that makes me... Oh, no, 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 don't tell me you think I'm Guinevere.
I mean, look at me, I'm definitely not a woman.
And what's so terrible about being a woman, Christopher?
Nothing, nothing, I love women, I'm just not female, not at all.
Chris can't help himself. He flexes to show his muscle. He's not ashamed to admit he's kind of proud of having such good arms.
And I don't feel like a Guinevere.
Chris looks pleadingly back and forth to Adam and Katie. Both seem unimpressed by his arguments.
Oh, Lord, Guinevere? Guinevere!
And then, in spite of himself, Chris starts to laugh, and to his huge relief, eventually so do Katie and Adam. Finally, Chris throws up his hands.
Why not? In a world where Chris Allen wins American Idol and Adam Lambert comes in second.
Katie puts her hand on Chris's elbow and fiercely says, "You deserve to win." At virtually the same moment, Adam hisses at Chris.
"How many times do I have to tell you that I'm glad you won? That it's all good?"
But Chris brushes those comments away. He's never lied to himself about this.
"No, Adam deserved to win, but somehow I did and everything is topsy-turvy. So, what the hell, I'm Guinevere."
And that means, of course, Katie says, just a little too casually, that Adam's in love with you and you're in love with him, but Adam's too noble to do anything about it. And you, Chris, you're just pretending everything is okay because that's what you do. Protect me, smooth things out for me.
Katie sighs.
Lance and Gwyn, I could never escape the two of you.
Chris feels himself freezing, his whole body going still and quiet. He shuts his eyes and thinks, I'm in love with Adam, and instantly knows it's true. It's maybe the truest thing he's ever felt. Just saying the words to himself is somehow liberating. Chris opens his eyes, and there, staring back at him, is Adam. And suddenly, Chris just has to go to him. He walks across the room, a little nervously, because really, who knows how Adam feels about everything right now, and leans down and does just what he finally recognizes he's been wanting to do for weeks. He kisses Adam on the lips. Chris hears Katie's sharp intake of breath, but right at this moment he can't even think about it because Adam has his arms around Chris and is pulling Chris down, down. There's nothing remotely ladylike about this, the little part of Chris's brain that's still stuttering over Guinevere thinks, but all the rest of Chris is feeling Adam, solid at last beneath him. And Chris is somehow sprawled across Adam's lap, grazing his hands along Adam's face as Adam kisses Chris's eyelids, his cheeks, his mouth. Chris is loving the afternoon stubble growing along Adam's jaw and feels a kind of pleased sense of wonder that he, Chris Allen from Conway, Arkansas, has Adam's cock getting hard beneath him. But then, no, Adam is pushing Chris away and saying, Stop, stop, Chris, we can't do this, ever. You don't understand. This is the lifetime. This lifetime where I finally don't fuck things up for you and Arthur. I mean, Katie, whoever the hell we are. I finally have to do the right thing. I have to leave.
And suddenly, impossibly, 5'3" Katie Allen is towering over both of them. She says with absolute authority, "Don't you dare leave, Adam Lambert. You always were such a drama queen, and it won't fix anything at all. Then I'll just end up living with mopey-faced Gwyn, which, if I recall correctly, I've done in several other lives, and it isn't fun at all and doesn't end well for any of us. This time around, we're living in the 21st century, so let's act like it. Chris and Adam, I hereby unbind all ties of loyalty to me. You are free to go. Go, have wild gay man sex, I'll survive. I'm a big girl. I just need to man up and soldier on." Chris can't bear to see the pain in Katie's face. "No," both Chris and Adam say in unison. Chris climbs off of Adam's lap. Hey, I love you, Katie Lou. I've loved you forever and ever. Nothing has changed that. Nothing can." Chris pulls Katie to him. How he loves the little crease she gets between her eyes when she's serious, and the way her hair slips between his fingers. Katie stiffens for a moment, but then lets go because they just fit. They always have, and Chris can feel her shaking against him, tears wetting his shirt. Very much his blonde-haired girl. "Oh, sweetheart, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't quite know what came over me. We'll work it out. We'll figure out something." Even as he says it, Chris isn't so sure, because as much as he loves Katie, part of him is already missing being in Adam's arms. "Yes, we will, and that something is me getting the hell out of here," says Adam, who is now standing by the door. "No, don't go." Katie's using that voice again, the one Chris has only heard over the past few months. The voice of, yep, he's got to admit it, the voice of royalty that neither he nor Adam seem able to ignore. "Chris, let go of me. I'm fine. And, Adam, just settle down." Adam stays by the door and says, "I won't deny my oath of loyalty to you, Katie. To tell the truth, I don't even want to. I realize now that I saw you, back at Burningham when I was doing shrooms. And I thought it was just a vision, but it wasn't. It was a memory of me on my knees, swearing upon my sacred honor to serve Arthur all of my days. And then I swore again at the hotel. And, Your Highness," Adam gives a little self-mocking bow, "Your glorious majesty, oh my Lady Kate, it's just not the kind of thing you can pretend isn't there. I have this feeling that if I tried, I'd lose everything, not just you and Chris, but me too. I wouldn't be me anymore. And if I weren't me, I wouldn't sing. And if I didn't sing, then I wouldn't live. So you see, it's not an option." Chris's thoughts are swirling. "You both keep talking like you know things I don't know. As if you're so certain. Well, I'm telling you right now, I'm not. I don't remember ever being anybody but me. Plain old Chris Allen. And I'm okay with that, or at least I used to be." "But Chris, don't you see?" Chris notes that Katie is back on her throne and looks remarkably at home there. "That's part of the deal. Shirley explained it all to me. You never remember. I do, and Lance does. But through all the lifetimes, Guinevere never remembers a thing." "Well, that's just stupid," Chris huffs. "And his name is Adam, not Lance." "It's okay, Chris. I'm Adam and I'm Lance. They both feel right to me." Adam is back in the room now, sitting several inches away from Chris, positively emanating a do-not-touch vibe. Which just isn't right and makes Chris rebellious, because why should everyone but him be calling the shots? So Chris, quite deliberately, scooches closer to Adam until their legs are touching. And God forgive him, but Chris can't help but feel a bubbling up of happiness when he breathes in Adam's scent. "Are we all quite comfortable now?" Katie asks sharply. "Because I need you to listen up. My grandma Emmeline may not have known that damn and Yankee were two separate words, but she did know a little about me." Chris nods. Grandma Emmeline is legendary for being right about everything. "Ever since I was little, she told me, 'Katie, girl, you were born to be a mother, to have a big old brood of children under your feet for you to boss around and love.' And guess what, Christopher?" Shirley agrees. "It's time for me to have a baby." Chris feels himself flush from head to toe and shifts away from Adam. Before his eyes, that little bubble of happiness almost literally pops. "Katie, I can't. You know I can't." "Yes, I know." She glances over to Adam and explains. "Chris contracted a bad form of hepatitis on his mission. He almost died." Chris hears Adam's small gasp, feels his hand reaching out to him, but bats it away. He's not ready to talk about this, to share this failure. And yes, no matter what Katie says to him, it feels like a weakness. Like being less than. But Katie ruthlessly continues on. "We knew from day one that we wanted to be parents, but it turns out that since the illness, Chris can't make a baby. But Chris, honey, here's what I remember now. Arthur and Guinevere were never able to have children, not in all our lifetimes. My line always ends with me." Adam stands and starts pacing the room. So adopt. There are plenty of kids that need a home. We gays do it all the time.
It's not that easy, Adam. I mean, I do want to adopt. I kind of think that's how I'm going to get the whole passel of kids Grandma Emma Jean saw me with, but adopting won't take care of our problem. At least that's what Shirley said. She said that Arthur needs a child to carry on his line, my line. A child born from love, she said, to break this sad cycle of lives without generativity. Lifetimes of broken oaths and hearts.
It weirds Chris out when Katie starts using words like generativity. This is not how his Katie talks. But there she is, looking oddly pleased with herself and a little shy. What the hell is going on?
But guys, listen, here's the thing. Shirley says we've never been here in this combination before, in these genders.
I haven't been a woman before.
Katie suddenly quirks a smile.
And I do think I wear it rather well, don't you?
Yes, Chris thinks, you wear it well. Adam stops pacing and looks at Katie, a sudden flash of understanding crossing his face.
Arthur, you want me to get you pregnant?
Yes, Lance, I do. And not with some kind of trick of modern science, turkey basters and all that. To break our curse, this baby has to be born of our love, of the love between the three of us.
Chris startles. Let me make sure I understand. In order to break this cycle of unhappy endings, you have to have Adam Lambert's baby?
When you put it like that, it sounds ridiculous, Katie complains.
Chris sighs. That's because it is ridiculous.
He looks over to Adam for confirmation. But Adam's back is turned, his shoulders stiff.
Oh my God, Adam, you're actually thinking about this.
Adam takes a deep breath and his body relaxes. He turns around and his face is, well, Chris isn't ashamed to say it. His face is fucking beautiful. Alight with a kind of hope that Chris didn't even know he'd been missing before.
Adam walks over to Katie, and as if it's the most natural thing in the world, kneels before her.
You think this will really work? He asks her.
I do, she says.
And you know, Katie, that while you're lovely in every way, that I'm really, truly, very, very off the Kinsey charts gay this lifetime. I mean, so queer I don't think I could even get it up for Gwen if she weren't a boy.
Don't call me Gwen, complains Chris, but no one seems to be listening.
Oh, my dear, I do know. That's why we can't do this alone. We need Gwen. He's our bridge.
So, Adam, as an act of loyalty to your liege lord, Katie gestures to herself. And lady, she adds, gesturing to Chris, will you help Christopher and me to have a baby?
If this means we won't have to keep going through lifetimes betraying each other and breaking our hearts, then yes, yes I will.
Adam turns to Chris. That is, if Chris is on board with this.
Chris gathers himself. This is an important moment and he has to be careful. Words haven't always been his strong suit. Both Katie and Adam are looking at him with impossible love and fear in their faces.
Okay, so this is all just too Twilight Zone-y, and I don't really have any of the, what's the word, I guess, context? All those memories from past lives you seem so clear about. So I've got to take this thing from now, from today. And Katie, Adam and I haven't even had a chance to talk. I mean, just a few minutes ago we were two guys sitting in a waiting room pretending not to have the hots for each other.
Adam lets out a surprised laugh, and Katie has a rather frosty expression on her face.
Katie Bear, I know that when you get an idea, there's just no stopping you, but this is kind of a big step, and there's one thing I won't do.
What's that? Katie asks.
I won't use Adam. He's not just some pawn to move around until you get your perfect baby.
We get our perfect baby, Katie corrects.
Okay, our baby. But this thing with Adam, it's not going away. I mean, what I feel and everything.
This is so not like Chris. He's more of a doer than a talker, but there seems no way around it this time.
I want to have a real relationship with Adam. I want to be his... Crap, I want to be his boyfriend, and I want to be your husband. That is, if you'll both have me.
For some reason, Adam is cracking up, which wasn't really the reaction Chris had been going for.
What's so funny?
Oh, it's just Brad. I'm just thinking about what Brad will say. I'm never going to live this down.
Brad?
Chris knows he sounds whiny. A fierce jolt of possessiveness hits him, and he stands up, walks over, grabs Adam's hair, and tugs hard.
I do not want you thinking about Brad right now.
This time, Adam's sharp intake of breath goes right to Chris's groin. Adam, still kneeling, looks up at Chris and says,
Brad who? Can't think of anyone but you.
That's better. Chris can't help but feel a little smug. He likes having Adam's full attention.
Katie clears her throat meaningfully. As far as I'm concerned, it's a deal. Not an easy deal, mind you, but when have things ever been easy for the three of us? We'll have lots of details and dynamics and things to work out, but here's the core of our pledge. Chris is the beloved one, my beloved and Adam's. Adam smiles up at Chris, but this doesn't feel right. So Chris kneels as well, putting one hand on Adam's knee and the other reaching out for Katie's hand. She takes it for a moment and gives it a warm squeeze and then lets go. Katie continues. We'll make love together and we'll make a baby. Sudden images of Katie and Adam naked flash through Chris's mind. Really, this whole thing could turn out very okay for him. Katie reaches out and touches first Adam, then Chris upon the shoulder in a kind of benediction. And, as usual, she has the final words. We will be loyal to each other all of our days. And we're going to have a ridiculous reincarnated threesome, baby. Katie slaps Chris lightly on the cheek, which he would object to, but doesn't because she follows it with a fierce kiss. She leans in and whispers in his ear, You're really lucky I love you, Alan. October 14th, 2009, Adam's room. Adam sits on his bed, legs crossed, repeating the mantra Shirley taught him to use when the memories become too much. The trick is to find the pebble in the pond, sending ripples out across the surface, but never disturbing the cool, clear water below. Adam lets himself relax, memories washing through him, but not owning him. A midwinter night huddled around a fire with Arthur, plotting out a siege to take place at sunrise. A spring morning in the hills of the Lake District. Guinevere unbuttoning her bodice, laughter and invitation in her every gesture. The sharp feel of a whip across his back, in so many lives, so many places, punishments he does and does not deserve. The feel of his sword deadly and certain in his hands. Guinevere laughing, crying, calling out his name, pushing him away, shameful and wanting. Arthur gently kissing Lance on his lips and then tossing back a draught of poison and withering to death before Lance's eyes. Guinevere, stern and lovely, tied to a wooden stake with tendrils of fire licking at her feet. Infinite variations on the same sad story. That's enough to make Adam weep. Too many lifetimes colliding together, spinning him out of here and now. He can't afford the distraction today. Katie's time is near. He can feel it. Taking a deep breath, Adam turns his mind to the present. To last evening, Chris pulling him close for a kiss before walking out the door to spend the night with Katie. Things are still complicated. Maybe they always will be. Adam can't help but see the way Chris is pulled, wanting to be all things to all people, loving them both with a ferocity that doesn't fit with the laid-back exterior Chris Allen shows the world. Still, Adam thinks, some days they find a kind of equilibrium, a balance and center point that all lead directly back to the life growing inside of Katie. Adam remembers back to the night that life had been started. Chris standing naked, surprisingly unself-conscious, next to the bed he shared with Katie, at least on the nights when he wasn't with Adam. The room awash in candlelight. Katie sitting up in the bed, the coverlet pulled up just below her breasts. Her breasts, small, white, and lovely, her nipples the same shade of girly pink as her nail polish, blonde hair framing her face. Adam looked at her and felt a sort of artist's appreciation without any heat. You're beautiful, he had told her, and she had looked suddenly vulnerable and very young, as if she'd been afraid he'd find her repulsive. Of course she is, Chris had said, seemingly the only one in the room completely at ease. And so are you. But you have way too many clothes on. Come over here and let me take care of that. Adam had felt a sudden flush of shyness at those words, but in all his lives he'd never turned down an opportunity to have Gwen undress him. So he walked over to Chris, who stood on tiptoe for a moment to give Adam a welcoming kiss before running his hands lightly across Adam's chest, humming softly to himself as he felt Adam's nipples harden. And then Chris slowly unbuttoned Adam's shirt, glancing back occasionally to smile at Katie, who watched solemnly from the bed. Chris pulled the shirt off of Adam and moved quickly to his jeans, unzipping them just enough to cup his hand briefly beneath Adam's balls before falling to his knees to pull the jeans to the floor. Chris kissed Adam's inner thigh before standing. Then he stepped away from Adam and walked to the other side of the bed. I can be your bridge, he said. I can love you both more than life itself. But we're never going to make a baby if the two of you don't find a way to connect here. Adam knew Chris was right, but he felt frozen and oddly exposed under Katie's gaze. Thoughts he'd stuffed down for years were surfacing again. Thoughts about being too fat, too loud, too needy, too freckly, too queer, just generally too much. As if hearing his thoughts, Katie at last spoke. Just stop it, Adam Lambert. You are ridiculously perfect in every way. And you make me damn glad I'm not a man in this lifetime. because your prodigious glambolt lives up to its reputation and would have given me a permanent inferiority complex.
Oh, I see how this is going to go, Lambert, says Chris in mock despair. She always liked my Chris bulge just fine before.
Adam felt himself begin to relax, and Katie patted the bed. Come here, Lance, you're too far away.
Adam moved over to the bed and sat down. Gently, he pushed Katie's hair away from her face and bent to kiss her. She opened her mouth to his, impossibly soft lips and tongue meeting him. He took in the familiar taste of Crest toothpaste and the unfamiliar scent of something light and feminine. It was a very nice kiss, he congratulated himself, gentlemanly and appropriate.
Katie snorted. I won't break, you know. I've seen you kiss Chris. Stop being so damn polite.
Chris was suddenly on Katie's other side, kneeling on the bed. Yes, kiss her more like this. And he pulled Adam into a long, hot kiss, lacking elegance, but filled with want and need, and that dance for control that Adam so loved in all of the sex he had with Chris.
That does look better, Katie said approvingly.
Adam looked at her helplessly. God help him, he just couldn't imagine kissing her like that. And if he couldn't kiss her with that much conviction, how was he ever going to actually have real, live, heterosexual sex with her?
Katie must have read the panic in his face.
Oh, God, Adam, you're impossible, she sighed, exasperated. First of all, you haven't said a word since you've been in here, which is very noble and knightly and all, but it's beginning to remind me just a little too much of dear old, unevolved, sulking and silent Lancelot. And secondly, remember, I'm not just Katie, I'm Arthur, too, and don't think I don't know that Lancelot always wanted to bone Arthur almost as much as he wanted to bone Guinevere.
Yes, thought Adam, but that was before Arthur was a girl.
And thirdly, Chris announced grandly, Katie has picked out a special magic outfit just for this occasion. And with a flourish, Chris pulled off the coverlet to reveal Katie naked, except for a pair of men's plaid boxers. And that, at last, did it for Adam. He'd fallen back laughing and then pulled both Chris and Katie into a hug, kissing each of them on their hair, their necks, their mouths. And then it had all been a tangle of limbs and mouths and sucking and discovery and laughter, with only a few awkward elbows. And in the end, it turned out that, with Chris's cock rubbing against his back legs and hands exploring his ass, and Katie's surprisingly filthy mouth urging Lancelot to prove his swordsmanship, the flamingly gay Adam Lambert, a.k.a. Sir Lancelot du Lac, entered the lovely Lady Catherine, King Arthur Pendragon himself, and together they made a baby. October 16, 2009, Labor and Delivery Room. Katie is propped up against the pillows, still sweaty and exhausted from the hard work of labor, an expression of positively Amazonian triumph on her face. Adam sits next to her on the bed, tears streaming down his cheeks.
He's yours too, you know, Adam says softly to Chris. Katie and I agree, you should get to name him.
This feels right to Chris, who is cradling the baby, his son as much as theirs, in his arms. Looking at the small face, still slightly squinched up and surprised-looking, as if not quite ready to relinquish the dark comfort of his mother's womb, Chris feels an intense stab of love, so sharp it's almost pain. And then a memory comes, a small shaft of insight into another life seen through the eyes of a woman. She is, Chris is, pulling a brush through long brown hair and waiting for an answer. Standing next to Chris / Guinevere is an old, wizened man. He whispers these words to her. There is no path that I can see in this life, lady. But have faith, and another time and place you'll find your way. And if I can, I will help. Adam is standing next to Chris now, has taken the baby from his arms, and is looking a little alarmed. Christopher, are you okay? What just happened? Chris shakes himself, focusing again on the present. Well, I guess I just had my first capital M memory, he says, invoking the special code they've all come to use to refer to these brief passages into the past. Katie claps her hands.
Guinevere remembers! Oh, thank God! Do you see what that means? We're breaking the cycle right here, today!
Well, it means something else, too, says Chris with certainty.
And what is that, my love? Adam asks.
It means that we have to name the baby after Shirley. Katie and Adam both look at Chris as if he has gone mad.
I am going to have to get all imperious on your ass if you decide to name our son Shirley, says Katie.
Chris throws his head back and laughs.
No, not her name now, her name from before. Don't you remember?
Both Adam and Katie shake their heads.
Well, I do. Adam, I promise I'm okay. Please hand me our son so I can give him his name. Adam hands the baby over, and Chris holds him and says, "Beautiful boy, son of Adam, Katie, and Chris, I name you this day after our dear friend and guide, who in this life is a crazy old actress named Shirley MacLaine. For helping me find my path at last, we honor her by giving you her oldest name. Henceforth, you shall be known as Merlin, Merlin Lambert Allen." The end.